From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Christmas week, so let's get started with a few fun Christmas facts. During the shopping season, Visa credit cards are used 5,340 times per minute. 7 out of 9 British dogs get Christmas cards. That's more cards than I get. In Caracas, Venezuela, it's customary for the streets to be blocked off on Christmas Eve so that people can roller skate to church. That's almost sacrilegious. And finally, a kiss burns up to 3 calories, so if you hang mistletoe, it's like starting your own exercise program. All right, in the studio today we have Kyle Tedding, Brian Kill, Paige Radke, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the year, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Well, I think most folks will admit that 2019 was a wonderful year for U.S. stocks, with the major indices all hitting all-time record highs late in the year. But, you know, Kyle, it started off kind of bumpy. If you wind back the clock to the fall of 2018, stocks lost over 19% last fall. We worried about higher interest rates. The Fed ultimately raised rates 4 times last year, and then in December, we were in the middle of a fairly bitter trade dispute with China, amongst other nations. And everybody worried that interest rates would keep going up, the trade war would last forever, and stocks really got hurt. We come into 2019, and by the end of the year, we now know that interest rates aren't going to go up anymore. We now know that the trade dispute's put on hold, at least for now. And stocks went to record highs. And to me, one of the conundrums for the year is that earnings didn't go up. You know, give or take, about 0.3% increase in earnings. And stocks, you know, went to record levels. You don't normally see that.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think you look at the long-term direction for markets, and it tends to mirror earnings growth, right? That if you look over decades or hundreds of years even for some of the history we have on some of this stuff now, you know, those lines are pretty close together. But the reality is that if you look at just a snapshot of a year, things can deviate pretty significantly. And so, you know, I think that's very much what we've seen in 2019 is that earnings have gone nowhere. The good news is we started the year at a little bit of a discount. When you look at what stocks, you know, traded at relative to where earnings ended up being, it was maybe a little bit safe to say that stocks were cheap at the start of the year. And now I think safe to say that stocks are a little bit expensive. And so, you know, while we didn't get the earnings, we did get that that move higher in valuations. And so, you know, the hope is maybe we can see some earnings growth as we look ahead. But at least for now, you know, it was good to get that that separation between earnings and stock prices for the year.
Brian, as you know, we had predicted that interest rates would stop going up. We made changes in bond portfolios to better quality. But I don't think anybody really predicted that interest rates would plunge late this summer to the degrees that they did and result in the best bond market in 10 years.
Isn't it funny how stocks did so well this year and captured so much of the headlines, but really almost more surprising was the performance in stock, in the bond market. And corporate bonds up 14%, give or take, double digits for the first time since 2009, and how unusual that we had both a good year in stocks and bonds at the same time. That so infrequently happens. They usually work in opposition for each other. So see what happens as we head into the new year. But I think I was maybe even more surprised by bonds last year than even the stock market.
Well, and I think, Brian, too, it's important to look at, you know, why did bonds have such a great year? And I think it's easy to sort of point to a spur in economic growth or maybe a little decrease in uncertainty. But that actually typically bodes poorly for bond returns because you're going to see more inflation. You're going to see high growth, which might lead to increasing interest rates. So really, that would push investors into the more risky assets. So this may be a sign that, you know, we may not see some really great economic numbers in the coming years, but it'll likely stay pretty strong, steady, and that's going to look good for both risky and credit markets.
Kyle, I think one of the surprises this past fall has been that individual investors have been pouring out of stocks and stock funds for a number of months now. And as you know, I'm fond of contrarian indicators. And folks, what we're talking about here is the law of physics. You need fuel for the fire. You need people on the sidelines to add money to stock positions for the market to go higher. So I take it as good news that a lot of individuals are getting out of the markets at this point, because you need people to be on the other side of the trade. And the fact is, if everybody was all in, you know, what would take the market higher? So the fact that a lot of individual investors are getting out at this point, number one, I'm sure they're sorry because stocks kept climbing. But number two, we need that fuel for the next fire.
Yeah, you know, I think mutual fund flows and exchange-traded fund flows, one of those things we don't talk about enough often because it's a little bit difficult to grasp as opposed to kind of the more traditional earnings and interest rates conversations that we have. Yeah, earnings and interest rates are ultimately what drive stock prices, but when you look at that fuel that you talk about and what helps to boost prices, mutual fund flows can have a really big impact on prices getting pushed higher. And so, you know, you mentioned months, really, we've seen money flowing out of stock funds now for the better part of years, and it just has really accelerated in the past few months where we're just not seeing the kind of interest that you'd expect in this market. You know, I think you look pre-financial crisis and even look into the tech bubble, and you saw people pouring into asset classes that were doing well. You saw investors, I think, making some very poor choices about what would do well by simply looking at what had done well, and I think we're not seeing that this time around. Maybybe one of the reasons why I'm less concerned as we look ahead about what kind of bubbles there might be out there. Certainly a lot of stuff we don't know that could happen. But, you know, as you look at what do investors think about the world, investors have been more cautious than they've been in these kinds of markets in the past. And I think that's an encouraging sign for the path forward.
You know, I think the disconnect kind of for me anyway this year was this kind of background angst about all kinds of different things, China and you know, the impeachment and all these other things that were going on, the Brits and what was going on over there. But meanwhile, if you paid attention to interest rates and earnings and the things that drive stocks, they were really strong, really pretty stable, you know. And so you kind of are left at the end of the year thinking what might not have happened had you not had some of that background angst to kind of keep a lid on the market. And I think in some ways it kept it maybe from running away from itself like it often does at the in the later stages of a cycle. So I think we had a pretty good year in most respects and still don't feel like things are so out of control from a pricing standpoint.
Brian, this past summer we became the longest running expansion ever. And, you know, leading up to that and right around that time, there were more concerns about recession. And, you know, it hasn't materialized yet. And in fact, I think as the year has ended, we actually have seemed to gain some momentum as far as the economy is concerned. And it's a lot of it's based on consumers. The consumers have been confident and their sentiment is high according to all those sorts of surveys. And a lot of that is based on the labor market. You know, we've been adding jobs every month for like 110 months in a row or something. It's twice the record that it was before that, and that's empowering a lot of people, encouraging a lot of people to want to spend their money. But again, they're not doing it willy-nilly, and they're not going all great guns.
Willy-nilly, huh? Paige, let me ask you about international investing for Americans. I mean, as you're well aware, the dollar strengthened all of last year as the Fed raised interest rates four times. Dollar continued to rally into this year. It's a pretty good headwind for U.S. investors. And, you know, I think it's interesting to see how many markets overseas haven't even recovered from the financial crisis compared to the United States, where our securities prices are well above even the prior peaks that we saw.
Yeah, you know, I think it's important to just remember that it's been a while, but the United States has been leading this economic charge. We've been leading the market charge. So, you know, it's not like international indexes did bad for the year. If you look at the Europe 600, it was up, you know, 14-15%. Japan gained, you know, over 17. Even the emerging markets were over 10% higher. So these are all pretty good years, but that doesn't change the fact that the S&P 500 was really the place to be throughout the whole year. So, you know, just from a valuation standpoint, I think United States stocks might be a little bit more on the pricey side. Across the board internationally, they're trading right at their 10-year average for multiples, or even just a little bit below. But, you know, you have to remember that just because something's cheap doesn't mean it's going to be the best investment for you out there. And you want to make sure that you don't fall into that value trap trying to reach into that, you know, international a little too deep.
Paige, it's been almost 2 years, I think, since we had a portfolio manager in here who said that he thought and his views were that the U.S. dollar was maybe 12 to 15% overvalued. And part of that conversation was, yeah, but that doesn't mean that it's going to come back to fair value anytime soon. And I think that's what we've seen is, you know, you look back to the financial crisis, the strength of the dollar on an annual basis has been about a 200 basis point headwind to the returns of non-U.S. stocks. That's a really big headwind. And then finally this year, if you look at the strength of the dollar finally starting to slow, you know, now really stable from where we were at the start of the year, the dollar itself hasn't been much of a headwind anymore. And so if we do finally see that pause, if we do start to see that maybe there's some better opportunities overseas, even if there's a little bit of risk, you know, I think that paints a pretty attractive picture for, you know, continuing to have at least a you know, small amount of exposure overseas. And for those clients who can, I think, afford a little more risk, you know, I think what we've seen so far this year that, yeah, maybe the U.S. was the better place to be, but the non-U.S. returns were still pretty strong, provided some good diversification. And I think we're finally getting that part of the story back to our portfolios.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note too that, you know, over the past 10 years, technology was really the place to be. The United States index is made up a pretty large part of that tech space, whereas internationally you're still going to see more of that consumer defensive, utilities, things like that. So if we continue to see tech have a huge raise, then the United States will continue to get that boost. But going forward, we may start to see that shift.
So for most of us, we're overwhelmed with questions from clients this time of year asking for our forecast for next year. So the next round of this podcast here is to go around the table and ask all of you to stick your necks out. So I'll go first, sticking my neck out. Even though the Fed has gone on record saying that they're not going to raise rates next year, I think that we're going to end next year with some upside pressure on rates. Number one, the overnight rate can't stay as low as it is forever. Number two, if consumers are out there spending and unemployment is so low, if you got a pulse, you can get a job this afternoon, consumer spending is not going to change. Government spending is not going to change, might even strengthen going into an election. And business spending might get some clarity because of the ceasefire, if you will, on the trade wars. So on the fixed income side, I think we'll see some pressure on some higher rates. Keep in mind, everybody, that the Fed only controls the overnight rate, not the longer rates that you care about. And Wall Street controls those, of course. And I think there could be some upside pressure on inflation and, as a result, interest rates. You know, for the market, I've got this sense that we fast-forwarded some of next year's gains into this year, that the big investors are kind of looking into next spring and summer and saying, you know, earnings look pretty good. I'm going to beat everybody to the table and make my position. So I think you saw a lot of portfolio tilts, if you will, this fall, favoring stocks. The idea of I want to get in before everybody else does. But I also think stocks are going to finish next year positive. I think it's huge that we have some clarity on rates. I think it's huge that there's a ceasefire on the trade conflicts. And I can also say that in almost all first years of a presidential term, stocks do well. So it didn't do well for President Obama's first year. It did not do well for George W. Bush's first year. But in almost every other case, stocks did well. So we have that going for us. But I think it's important for everybody to expect some kind of pullback this winter. It's inevitable. The stock market has gone too high. We're at that overbought here. But I think long-term the picture looks fairly good with stable rates, earnings that are above average for the next couple of years, and consumers really driving the bus here.
Well, and let's be honest here, Bob, it's going to be difficult to see the kind of year we saw this year for a while, especially with prices where they are right now, especially with valuations are where they are right now. But, you know, you look into the start of 2020, we're already getting news that Boeing, for example, suspended the 737 MAX production. That's probably a 0.5%, a 0.5% of GDP as you look at the first quarter. And so, I mean, I think there's reason to think that the start of the year is going to be a bit bumpy. There's, you know, in addition to the valuation issue, in addition to the Boeing issue, you've got the midst of a presidential election here. And so you're going to get a lot of rhetoric that's going to make the markets think what, you know, what could happen here. And so, you know, I think, you know, you get through winter, you start to get a little bit of clarity on what direction the country's leaning. You start to get a little bit of clarity on what direction we're leaning more broadly. And all of a sudden, I think, as you say, you might have bought yourself enough time for returns to come back to where they're supposed to be. And so if earnings are even close to what we expect them to be, if, you know, rates stay low the way that we expect, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic that we get maybe a slightly below average year next year for stocks, but certainly a positive number. And that would be, you know, I think on the back of a 25%+ year for stock returns this year, I think that'd be a really healthy thing for investors.
You know, the average for the year after the S&P goes up 20% has been around 11%, which I think is pretty ambitious. Corporate earnings forecast for next year, I think, are 10% growth, maybe a little under that right now, which also seems a little bit ambitious, Bob, for the reason you mentioned. Is I think probably some of that was taken in this year. So I'd be surprised if domestic stocks did that well, but I would guess we'd make some money. I do think there are maybe some opportunities overseas. I'm kind of fascinated that maybe globally interest rates are going to settle a little bit, maybe move north and provide some stability. Some of the issues with the Brits should be resolved in some form or fashion. That may add some stability. But I do think it's going to be challenging in the bond market to make decent money. I think we got paid for interest rates going down, and as they go up, we're going to give that back this year. So if you kind of put those things together, maybe we do a little better overseas. We'll probably do a little below normal with domestic stocks, and I think bonds are probably going to be a little bit disappointing, and that adds up to be an okay year, but nothing too substantial.
I think 2020 will add 12 more months to the economic expansion. I don't know that we're going to have a recession yet, but we don't know what causes recession. I mean, you know, something out of the blue can happen, and that's not something you can really predict much. And we've actually done some great videos, I think, on our website that address that. That's why you have a balanced portfolio, because you don't know when that's going to happen. But, you know, from everything that I look at, that looks like it's going to continue. And I think, you know, the labor market still looks strong. You know, we're going to reach some demographic issues where we're just running out of workers with the skills that are needed for the jobs that are open. And you know, that's going to help wages, and that's going to, you know, perpetuate the consumer spending, but it's also going to eventually get at inflation. I'll also say that the Brewers, Bucks, and Packers all will be in the playoffs.
Whoa.
And one of them will be in the finals.
There you go. Paige?
Yeah, so I just think as we head into 2020, one of the big themes that I've been kind of looking at is just, you know, the decrease in uncertainty. We spent the past 2 years or so really just wondering where so many things are going to go. There's been a lot of questions hanging. And my hope for 2020 is that some of those questions get answered, you know, on the trade front, as Brian was saying, from the Brexit standpoint, some more trade deals, you know, not just with China, but we just had the new North American trade agreement go through. That could bode well for our economy as well. So, again, while I think the market will probably have a little bit more tepid growth than we're used to, the overall economy will continue to stay strong for, you know, at least another few months while we sort of hammer things out and go on into the year.
Well, folks, thanks for listening to our podcast. Best wishes to everybody for the new year. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.